Erev Tov, everyone. Welcome. It is a great schus for us at the OU Israel Center to be able to once again learn with our very, very distinguished teacher and beloved teacher, Rosh Yeshiva Rav Zev Leff. Rabbi Leff, of course, no stranger to all of us at the OU, has been a vital part of the OU for many decades. And Baruch Hashem, despite all the challenges of Zoom and being socially distanced from one another, we have the great excuse to welcome Rabbi Leff back to our universe, our virtual OU Israel Center, for a special series this year on the Moedim, on the Yomim Tovim throughout the year. And it is a thrill for me to be able to pass the baton to Moreinu Rabbeinu Rav Zev Leff.
Thank you, Rabbi Shor. And I just want to thank the OU, the Israel Center, for giving me this opportunity and for spreading all the many and varied Torah classes that they do, and they should continue doing so and have a lot of hatzlacha. Okay, the topic is Tu Bishvat. I saw in the B'nai Yisoschar a very interesting idea about Tu Bishvat, and that's what I want to elaborate on. So we'll spend a few minutes telling you over the B'nai Yisoschar, and after that I will begin my elaboration of his words, so don't blame him for what I'm going to tell you after that. The B'nai Yisoschar says the following. He says there's an argument in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah when exactly the world was created. Rabbi Yoshua says the world was created in Nisan, and Rabbi Eliezer says the world was created in Tishrei. Now, that does not mean that the world itself was created either on the first of Tishrei or the first of Nisan, but rather man was created either on the first of Tishrei or the first of Nisan. If you go back 6 days, that means that the actual world was created either on the 25th day of Elul, and man was created 6 days later on the first of Tishrei, or the world was created on the 25th day of Adar, and man was created 6 days later on the first of Nisan. If you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Elul, you get the 15th day of Av, Tu B'Av. If you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Adar, you get Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat. Now, what's significant about 40 days? Chazal say that before a person is conceived, 40 days before the conception of a person, so in Shamayim, they're already preparing for that person. Bas Ploni Leploni, Soda Ploni Leploni, who he's going to marry, what material possessions he's going to have. And all of that is done 40 days before conception. Says the B'nai Yisoschar, it would stand to reason that before the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, he was preparing for it 40 days earlier. So Tu B'Shvat is the 40-day preparation for the creation of Nisan, and Tu B'Av was the 40-day preparation for the creation of Tishrei. That is the B'nai Yisoschar. And now we will spend the rest of the time elaborating on that and explaining what it really means. First of all, Tosos asked the following question. How can there be an argument when the world was created? Either it was created in Nisan or it was created in Tishrei, right? And also we know that whenever Chazal argue, they're both right. How could they both be right? How could the world have been created in Nisan and in Tishrei? Says Tosfos, no. The world was created b'machshava, in thought, in Tishrei, and l'maisa in Nisan. It was created actually in Nisan, that's what it seems to say, and in thought, it was created in Tishrei. That's a very difficult idea. What does that mean? God created the world in thought, and then he created in action. I think that what Tosfos means is the following. You're all familiar with the almost very first Rashi in the Chumash. Rashi says, Bereish is bara Elokim. Elokim is midas hadin. B'chtchila ola b'machshava liboros b'midas hadin. God originally intended to create the world with pure justice, no mercy. But in the end, he saw the world could not exist like that. Most people would not be able to exist with total justice. They need mercy. So he added mercy. And that's why later on it says, Hashem Elokim, Hashem is Midas HaRachamim, Elokim is Midas HaDin. God combined the two. What does that mean? God changed his mind? And why would God want to create a world with total justice and no mercy? Well, the idea is, the reason the Rabban Shem created this world, why didn't he just create neshamos and put them into Olam Haba and fulfill his purpose of creation, of showering his good on a creation that could receive that ultimate eternal good? That is what we call Olam Haba, the ultimate eternal good. And that was God's intention of creation altogether. God is the ultimate good, and he wanted to shower his goodness on a creation that can receive it. And the ultimate goodness is a intimate, eternal relationship with God, which is what we call Olam Haba. So why didn't God just create Olam Haba, create our neshamos, and put them in Olam Haba and shower his goodness on us? Because the Rabban Shem knew that if he did that, it would not be the ultimate good, because a person does not appreciate what he's given for free unless he earns it. Something unearned is not appreciated as much as something that you earn. So the Rabban Shem wanted that Olam Haba to be earned so we would really appreciate it. So he put us in this world and he distanced himself from us and he said, you create that relationship with me by doing things that make your neshama more godlike. We have a Torah and mitzvahs, and that is the symbol of what kinds of things make you more godlike and therefore give you an opportunity to connect yourself to God in this world and have the benefit of it eternally in the next world. So this world was meant to be able to earn our share of the world to come. Now, if you earn exactly what you deserve, so then you've earned it. If you get help, you didn't earn it. So God had originally intended that the world should exist only on justice. You get exactly what you deserve. And hopefully everybody will earn their share in the world to come and deserve it, and then it will be the ultimate pleasure. But the Rabban Shem knew that many people, if they had to earn it totally without any mercy, would lose it. So he added mercy. Now the Shaloh HaKodesh says, that does not mean that God changed his mind, but it means that the world was created on two dimensions. There's a dimension of total justice. And those individuals, rare individuals in the history of the world, that could exist on total justice, so they live in that dimension, the dimension where there's no mercy, only justice, but they benefit from that because everything they get in the world to come is their doing. No help, no mercy. There's a downside to that any little thing they do wrong, they get punished for in this world very, very meticulously. Who are these individuals? I'll give you two examples who the individuals were who could live on the dimension of total justice with no mercy. Yaakov Avinu asked the Rabban Shem, says the Michtam Eliyahu, V'hoyo Hashem li l'Elokim, God of mercy, I want him to be the God of justice for me. I don't want any mercy. And that's why Yaakov Avinu had a very difficult life. But Yaakov Avinu's Olam Haba was totally earned, no help, no mercy. So eternally he benefited from that. Even though in this world, there's no tzaddik who doesn't do something, some things wrong, so he had to be punished meticulously. Rabbi Akiva was another example. the Shalach, or the Says, that's what it means, when they were torturing Rabbi Akiva to death, the Romans, and combing his flesh with iron combs. So the Malachim came and complained, Zu Torah v'zu Schara, is this the reward Rabbi Akiva gets for his Torah? What was the Rabbon Shalom's answer to them? Shtok, keep quiet. Kach also b'machshava lefonai. This is what came into my mind. So the simple idea that most people learn is that God said, look, this is in my mind. You can't fathom my mind. And in my mind, this makes sense. To the mind of a human being, maybe you don't understand it, but it's beyond your comprehension. Says the Shalach HaKadosh, it means something completely different. You keep quiet. Kach also b'machshav al lefonai. When I originally created the world, I created it on a dimension of total justice, no mercy. Rabbi Akiva can live in that dimension, and therefore he has to be punished for the small things he did with no mercy. But his Olam Haba is beyond comprehension. So Rabbi Akiva was another one who could live in that dimension. Most of us have to live in the dimension where there's mercy. Better we should get help than we should lose everything. So we'll get what we earn with some help, and it won't be 100% appreciated because we got help, we got the mercy, but that's better than losing it completely. Okay. In my estimation, these two dimensions, when they were created, were simultaneous. There was no time. So God created the world on two dimensions, the dimension of total justice and the dimension of justice tempered with mercy. But when God created time right away in the beginning, those two dimensions gravitated towards two time zones. The time zone of justice is Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaDin. That's the day of judgment and justice. And the dimension of mercy gravitated to Nisan. That's the time of mercy, which we'll see in a second. And therefore, that's what it means. That's what Tosa says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world b'machshava. His intention, his ideal thought was total justice. That was one creation, one dimension of creation. And then Lamaisa, on another dimension, he added mercy. The two dimensions exist simultaneously, but one gravitated towards the month of Tishrei, and that's the Rosh Hashanah of Din, and the other gravitated towards Nisan, which is the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim. Now, the Rosh Hashanah of Din is obvious. Rosh Hashanah is a time of judgment, justice, Yom HaDin. There's a hint to it in the name Tishrei, because the Kabbalists say in Kabbalah, whenever you have a word that has the Aleph Beis in order, it's a sign of mercy. Whenever you have a word where the Aleph Beis is in the opposite order, right, backwards, then it's a sign of justice and judgment. Tishrei is the Aleph Beis backwards, Tav, Shin, Resh, backwards Aleph Beis. That's Din, that's judgment. That's the Rosh Hashanah of judgment and justice. And the real name of Nisan in the Torah, Nisan is one of the months in the Torah that has a name. It's called Chodesh HaAviv. Aviv is Aleph Beis. So that is the month of mercy. Not only that, but the month of Nisan contains within it the holiday of Pesach. What does Pesach mean? So we're all accustomed to know the meaning that is the most common. That Passover, to jump over. Pesach, Abote Bnei Israel. But the Targum Onkelos translates Pesach as Chos, had mercy, mercy. So Pesach is a holiday of mercy. And Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah of the creation of man together with mercy, as opposed to Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is the anniversary of the creation of man on the dimension of justice. Okay, now let's take it a step further. If that's the case, then according to the B'nai Yisrael, somehow Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av, prepares the world for the Rosh Hashanah of judgment and justice, and Tu B'Shvat prepares the world for the Rosh Hashanah of mercy. And every year we relive that creation. It's not just a commemoration of the past, but all of our holidays and all of the significant times of the calendar are reliving those events of the past. So on the 40 day before the Rosh Hashanah of Din, of Tishrei, we begin to prepare for it somehow on Tu B'Av, and the 40 day preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of mercy is Tu B'Shvat. Now let's see how that works. There's one more thing that Tu B'Shvat and Tu B'Av have in common. They both have to do with trees. Tu B'Shvat, obviously, is the Rosh Hashanah of trees, Rosh Hashanah le'ilanot. And basically the idea being that on Tu B'Shvat, the sap from that year's rainfall begins to go into the trees. Up until then, it's living on the rainfall from before Tishrei, this last year's rainfall, and the fruits begin to blossom, and that has to do with fruit trees. That's Tu B'Shvat. What does Tu B'Av have to do with trees? According to one opinion in the Gemara, the significance of the 15th of Av is the following. During the summer months, they used to cut wood for the Mizbeach to burn on the altar. Why do they do it dafka in the summer? Because any wood that has worms in it is invalid for using on the Mizbeach. So in the summer, when it's very hot and the trees are dry because of the direct sunlight, so worms do not develop in dry wood. When the sap begins to form, so then the worms can form in the trees. So the entire summer they cut wood, but the cutoff point, which wasn't really a pun, in any case, the cutoff point was Tu B'Av. On Tu B'Av, the days start becoming shorter and the nights longer. The sun's rays are no longer direct, and it's possible for worms to form in the trees. So they stopped cutting wood and they made a seum. Whenever you have a mitzvah that takes an extended amount of time and you finish it, you make a seum. So the yontif of Tu B'Av was the seum of the mitzvah of cutting wood for the altar for that year. So that Tu B'Av has to do with wood, with trees, cutting down dry trees and burning them on the Mizbeach eventually. And Tu B'Shvat has to do with living trees, which are full of sap and producing fruit. Let's first discuss, so how did cutting down trees on Tu B'Av prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of justice, of judgment? How does that work? It's a 40-day preparation. How does it work? What are we preparing by cutting down trees, right, and using their wood eventually for burning on the Mizbeach? The Torah says, Ha'adam eitz hasada. The Torah compares people to trees. So the Maharal says, what is this comparison? Why are people like trees? So the Maharal says something very interesting. He says, if you look at a tree and see its configuration, and you look at a person and see his configuration, you'll know how a person is like a tree. He says, basically, trees have roots that are rooted in the ground. Trees have limbs that are in the air, growing upward. A human being also has a root, that's his head. the root hairs are the hairs on the head. But the head is the root of the person. That's his seichel. That's where his neshama is. That's the main thing. And his limbs are his arms and his legs. So basically, we look like a tree. We have a root, we have limbs, we have a trunk, just like a tree has limbs, root, and trunk. There's only one big difference. A tree, the roots are down and the limbs are up. And a human being, his limbs are down and his root is up. So what does it mean, says the Maharal? It's not that we're upside down. We're just rooted in a different place. Trees are rooted in the physical world. Human beings are rooted in the heavens. We grow down from the heaven where we're rooted, and our limbs happen to be growing down from the heavens. I like to say there's a hint in the word eitz to this whole idea. If you vocalize the letters that form the word eitz, what are those letters? Ayin, tzadik. Ayin, as a verb, can mean look. Ayin, look. And tzadik represents a tzadik. Look at the tree, and you'll see a tzadik. Ayin, look at the tree, and you'll see a tzadik. How do you look at a tree and see a tzadik, like we said? What's a tzaddik? A tzaddik is somebody who's rooted in the heavens and not in the physical world. The main part of him is his head, his neshama, right? And if you cut away the root, there's no more tree. The limbs are the secondary thing. You can cut off the limbs and still maintain the tree. So I and tzaddik look at a tree, see where its roots are, see where its limbs are, know that the root is the main thing and the limbs are the secondary thing. Look at a human being. You'll see he also has roots and he has limbs, but his root is rooted in the heavens, not in the physical world. So if you look at the tree, you'll know what a tzaddik is, somebody who's rooted in the spiritual world. Now I deduce from that we are only standing on our limbs because we happen to be in a physical world, and we're growing down from the spiritual world. But if we would be totally in a spiritual world, then we should be like a tree on our head with the root down. And I found a medrash that says that in the spiritual world, in Gan Eden, tzaddikim, or everybody, walks on their head. Where's the medrash? The medrash says like this. The Torah tells us that when Rivka Imenu saw her chosson, Yitzchak, for the first time, she was sitting on a camel. And when she saw him, she fell off the camel. So the Medrash says the following. What did Rivka see that was so astounding that made her fall off the camel? Says the Medrash the following. Yitzchak Avinu at the Akedah, when the knife came just to his throat and Avram was ready to cut his throat, his neshama fled him. It went out of his body and he died. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu revived him, resurrected him. So Yitzchak had died and he was resurrected. But that was a very, very difficult situation for Yitzchak. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed to recuperate him, rehabilitate him. So he put him in Gan Eden for 3 years to rehabilitate him on being resurrected. The moment that Yitzchak was coming out of Gan Eden 3 years later is when Rivka saw him for the first time. And now, here comes the punchline. Now, says the Medrash, and as is well known, in Gan Eden, everybody walks on their head. And Yitzchak was still walking on his head when Rivka saw him for the first time. She was so astounded that her chosson's walking on his head, she fell off the camel. Somebody once told me she didn't fall off the camel. She fell head first. She wanted to be like her chosson. She wanted to get on her head. In any case, so we see that if we'd be in a spiritual world, we taka would be on our head. It's only our limbs are down because we happen to be in a physical world growing down from the spiritual world. There's a Gemara that says that someone clinically died and he saw what's in the next world. And they asked him, what did you see? He said, I saw a topsy-turvy world. Elyonim lamata, v'tachtonim lamala. I saw the ones on top, on bottom, and the ones on bottom, on top. So there are many meanings to that Gemara. But according to this, it's very simple. He saw a world where people were upside down, where they were walking on their head. In Hasidus, there's a concept of regular mala, of standing on your head and showing this is your spiritual posture. It says when the witch brought up the neshama of Shmuel Hanavi, she brought him up. He was upside down, head down, coming from the next world. Someone once told me also, maybe that's why most babies are born head first, because they're coming from a spiritual world into the physical world. They come in upside down. In any case, I was thinking, therefore, if we want to maintain a spiritual posture and show that our head is really the root, and our limbs, even though they appear to be where we are rooted in this world, they're only limbs, but we're growing from the spiritual world, and it's our head that is the root. So what do? We cover our head and we uncover our feet. We take off our shoes. When do we do that? On Yom Kippur, when a person's in Avel. In all those situations, we want to maintain a spiritual posture. A tree, the roots are covered by the earth and the limbs are exposed. So when we want to show that it is our head, our neshama, our seichel, is our root, and we're growing down from the spiritual world, we cover our head to show that that's the root. That's the part that's covered. And the feet are only the limb, and we uncover them, we take off our shoes. When Yom Kippur, we want to maintain a spiritual posture, cover our head, uncover our feet. An Avil wants to identify, empathize with the neshama that's in a spiritual world. You want to get closer to the spiritual world, cover your head and uncover your feet, take off your shoes. So that is the concept of a tree, of how a human being is compared to a tree. We're basically an upside down tree, but only upside down because we're in the physical world. If we'd be in a spiritual world, we talk it would be on our heads like a tree, the root down and the limbs up. However, there's a Medrash, a Gemara, that says the following on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Mayofu po'amayich bane'olim bas nadiv. How beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes, the daughter of the benevolent one. And the Gemara says, how beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes when you come aliyah l'regel, when you come up to the three pilgrimages, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Bas Nadiv, the daughter of the benevolent one, Avraham Avinu, who was the first one to convert and to make himself a Jew. I want to say what the Medrash means is the following. Normally, we want to take off our shoes to show that we're spiritual. So we take off our shoes and we cover our head, and that shows that really our head is the root and we're growing down from heaven, and our feet, even though they're what's on the ground, they're not the root, they're only the limb. But there's a time of year when you can leave your shoes on and still be spiritual. When is that? Sholosh Regalim, on Yom Tov. Because Yom Tov, we take all the physical things and we make them into something spiritual. Eating and drinking on Yom Tov is a mitzvah, becomes something spiritual. V'samachta b'chagecha. So how beautiful you are in your shoes. You don't have to take off your shoes. The shoes represent the physical world. The regel, the limbs represent the physical world. In fact, material possessions are called hayikum asher b'ragleihem. Things that set a person on his feet, because if we wouldn't be in a physical world, we wouldn't be set on our feet. We'd be set on our head. So, but there's a time of year when you can remain beautiful with your shoes on. The physical, the material becomes spiritual. When is that? Yontif. Where did we get the power to transform physical, material things to spiritual? From Avraham Avinu. He transformed his physical body of a goy into the body of a Jew, which was elevated and spiritual. And if he had the power to do it, we have the DNA that we can also transform the physical into the spiritual. In any case, so that is the idea of how a person is compared to a tree. Now, by cutting down trees and preparing the wood to burn on the Mizbeach is a preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei, the Rosh Hashanah of Din. How so? We say in the prayers of Rosh Hashanah, Umi yitztak lefanecha badin. How can anybody be innocent when it comes to pure justice, to pure judgment, right? Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov lo yechta. No human being is perfect. So how can we withstand? How can we possibly survive total justice? So the Svarim say, you know how you can survive it? If you give yourself over totally to God and say, God, I trust you. I'm putting myself in your hands, and I know that you will judge me favorably, and I can't come to you and claim that I deserve anything. I'm putting myself in your hands totally. I trust you. Do what you feel is proper. That's the only way a person can survive din. And that's what we do 40 days before Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei. We take a tree which represents human beings, and we cut it up into pieces, and we burn it on the altar. Fire is a symbol of din, of judgment, and that way we totally subservient and subdue ourselves and totally negate ourselves to the Rabbonu Shel Olam. That is the preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Din. That's how Tu B'Av is the 40-day preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei. Now let's go to Tu B'Shvat, which is the main thing we're supposed to be speaking about. Tu B'Shvat deals with not Eitzim. Eitz is the name of a tree, but it also means wood. Plain, ordinary wood is also called Eitzim, lumber, because it's not the fruit-bearing quality of a tree, it's the configuration and the material of the tree, wood, the bark, the roots, the limbs. Tu B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos. Ilanos is a rabbinic designation that basically applies to fruit trees. An ilan is a fruit tree. Now, even though the Gemara speaks about ilane shrak, there are ilanos that don't bear fruit, but the Gemara also says that in the future, when Mashiach comes, all ilane shrak will bear fruit. So they're all potentially fruit-bearing trees. It's just in this world, they don't actually bear fruit. But an ilan is a fruit-bearing tree, or a potentially fruit-bearing tree, and that is what we celebrate on Tu B'Shvat, the fruit-bearing quality of the tree. So now, I'll tell you something interesting that I discovered quite a few years ago about the word ilan. If you take the aleph away, put it in your pocket, you're left with three letters, yud, lamed, nun. Add up those letters in numerical value. Yud is 10, lamed is 30, is 40, and nun is 50, is 90. What letter is 90 in the alephase? Tzadik. Now take the aleph out of your pocket and put it together with the combination of yud, lamed, nun, which equals tzadik. What do you get? Eitz, aleph, tzadik. Except eitz is spelled ayin tzadik. This is an eitz with an aleph instead of an ayin. So now we have an eitz with an ayin tzadik, and now we have an eitz with an aleph, aleph tzadik. If eitz with an ayin, like I said before, means if you vocalize the letters, ayin tzadik, look and you'll see a tzadik. So what does aleph tzadik mean? Aleph means to learn. In modern Hebrew, when you train dogs, it's called iluf. Klavim. The word Aleph means to learn. So Aleph Tzadik, if you learn about the fruit-bearing quality of a tree, you'll know what a Tzadik is. So how does that work? How does learning about the fruit-bearing quality of a tree tell me what a Tzadik is? I know already how looking at a tree and its configuration can tell me what a Tzadik is. How of learning about fruit, how does that tell you what a Tzadik is? So let me tell you first the significance of fruit. Let me tell you two medrashim that seem to point to this fact, and then we'll explain what they mean. One medrash says the following. The Torah says, Ki savo el ha'aretz, when you'll come to Eretz Yisrael, unetatem kol eitz ma'achal. First thing you should do is plant fruit trees. First thing when you come into Eretz Yisrael. Says the medrash. Why? Because God said, when I created the world, that's what I did first. I planted trees in Gan Eden, fruit trees. So you be like me and plant fruit trees when you come to Eretz Yisrael. Now, on the surface, very difficult. I understand that we should be like God in his midos. He's merciful, you should be merciful. He's gracious, you should be gracious. But he plants trees and you should plant trees. Now, if we take that to the absurd, well, God makes it rain. We should walk around with a watering can and make it rain. Right? God blows the makes the wind. We should walk around blowing air, right, to make the wind. What does it mean? What does it mean? God planted fruit trees. We should plant fruit trees. Another medrash also that points out this importance of fruit, agriculture. It says that before Lech Lecha, Avram Avinu took a pilot trip. He went around the world looking for a place that if he would one day have children, he would want to settle there and raise his children there. And the Medrash says he came to Aram Naharaim in Chutz La'aretz, and he saw a bunch of idol worshippers eating, drinking, and partying. And he said, God, this is not the place I want to raise my children. He came to Eretz Yisrael, and he saw a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing, and harvesting. He said, ah, this is the place. Now, I live on a moshav. So you could say, well, the goal of the Jewish people is to be farmers. So that was what he's impressed with. These are farmers. These are people who are partying. So Eretz Yisrael, that's a place because it's a place for farmers. But that's absurd. The goal of the Jewish people is not necessarily to be farmers. A nice thing. But that's not the goal. I mean, we do have Shlosh Esrei Ikarim, but it's spelled with an ayin and a kuf, not an aleph and a chaf. We don't have the 13 farmers. So what does it mean? What did Avram Avinu see? A bunch of idol worshippers partying or a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing, and harvesting. They both were idol worshippers. Think it means the following. There are two philosophies of life in this world. What's this world all about? One philosophy I saw in a very concise one sentence on a t-shirt they were selling in New York many, many years ago. It was selling like hotcakes. On the t-shirt, it had one sentence. It said, the one who has the most toys when he dies wins. What does that mean? This world was created basically for you to have pleasure. Enjoy it. Live it up. You're born. You eventually die. Fill up the time between those two times with as much toys as you can. Toys are things that give you pleasure. They can be experiences, they can be things. You amass as many toys as you can between the time of birth and death, and you win. You have a successful life. Now, I was looking for an asterisk and a footnote of what exactly you win at that time since you're no longer here. And then I heard about a woman in Los Angeles who, before she died, wrote in her will that she does not want to be buried in a casket. She wants to be buried in her Rolls Royce. And went to court, and they upheld her wish, and they buried her in her Rolls Royce. Now, she had the biggest, most expensive toy. She got to be buried in it. She won. She had a very successful life of being buried in her expensive toy. I don't know exactly what that did for her. I'm sure her gas mileage at the time was great because she wasn't going anywhere. But in any case, that was one philosophy of life, a secular philosophy. Enjoy yourself. Do what you, some people enjoy themselves by going to the opera, some people by very crass things, some people by very, but the, basically the purpose is whatever you like, whatever makes you happy, do, that's, then you have a successful life. That's not the Torah's perspective on life in this world. We don't think that life in this world starts when you're born. It doesn't end when you leave this world. There's a world that existed, our neshamas existed when we, from the time we were created in a spiritual world, before we came into this world. When we leave this world, our neshamas will go back to a spiritual world. The purpose of this world is not necessarily to enjoy. You can enjoy the world, you should, but it's not the goal. This world is the place to put in effort to create the pleasure of the world to come eternally. So this is the world of work. Hayom lasosam, put in the effort here and you'll benefit from it eternally in the next world. That's really the place of pleasure. This world, you can enjoy putting in the effort, but that's not the goal. The goal is put in effort. So the goal will be to enjoy that pleasure eternally in the world to come. Says the Me'iri, therefore the world to come is not another world. Ha'olam haba hu pri ha'olam hazeh. The world to come is the fruit of this world. Here you plant the seeds, and there you reap the fruit. That's what olam haba is. Here you put in the effort, and there you see the results. So again, there are two philosophies. One is immediate pleasure. Immediate gratification. I want to enjoy myself. Live it up. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. That's one philosophy. Torah philosophy is put effort in this world so you'll benefit eternally in the next world. That's what Avraham Avinu saw. Avraham Avinu saw that Chutz La'aretz is conducive to the first philosophy. Eat, drink, and be merry. That's what they were doing. Partying. Eat, drink, be merry. That's what the world's all about, and the environment in Chutz La'aretz is conducive to that. But he saw in Eretz Yisrael, the environment is different. Even the Goyim, even the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But what are they doing? Putting in effort now for a future benefit. Okay, for them, the future benefit was when the fruit will come on the tree. But it's that concept of putting effort now for a future benefit. My children will put in the effort now for the real future benefit of the world to come. But Eretz Yisrael, the environment of Eretz Yisrael, the air of Eretz Yisrael is conducive to the second philosophy. The air and environment in Chutz La'aretz is conducive to the first. And that's what the Rabbanu Shlom said. When I created the world, what did I do? I planted fruit trees. This world is a place of planting for the fruit of Olam Haba. So you do the same thing when you come into Eretz Yisrael, show that you understand. It's a place to put in effort, do plant the seeds, and eventually you'll get the benefit of the seeds that you plant in this world as your share in the world to come eternally. So that's what this world is all about. It's basically planting the seeds and seeing the fruit in the world to come. Now, this idea that outside of Eretz Yisrael is conducive to the first philosophy, and Eretz Yisrael is conducive to the Torah philosophy, doesn't mean that you can't live a very fine Torah life in Chutz La'aretz. You can, and many people do. They're beautiful kehilas, but you have to go against the environmental influence to do that. You have to fight against it. The environmental influence is eat, drink, and be merry. On the other hand, in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't mean that everybody who lives here is going to live a beautiful Torah life. Unfortunately, there are people who don't. But they have to fight against the environmental influence here to live a non-Torah life. If you want to, the environmental influence is put in effort now for the future. I saw that once very clearly many years ago. Used to be, they had here in Eretz Yisrael what was called Shavua HaSefer. They still have it, but it's not the same thing anymore. Shavua HaSefer used to be that every city, the publishers of Sfarim and books would bring their either latest publications or the ones they couldn't get rid of to a central place in the city, put them out on tables, and for a week, every night, they would have Shavua Sefer. People would come and peruse the books and Sfarim, and they would sell them at a very greatly reduced price. And there was a night out. They had rides for the children and cotton candy. So it was a night out for the family. The adults would look around and buy Sfarim, and the children would have what to do. And I remember in Yerushalayim, it used to be in the Gana Pa'amon. That's where they had Shavua HaSefer. They had it in Netanya. They had it all over, all in the Rehovot, everywhere. So one year, I took my family one night to Shavua HaSefer. And me and my wife looked around at the Svarim, walked around the tables, and the children had their rides and their cotton candy. And we went home. And that night, at 1 o'clock in the morning, I had a flight to New York. If you remember what that is, flights to New York. In any case, so I had a flight to New York. And 11 hours later, I was in JFK, got off the plane. And the person who met me at the airport said to me, there's something very special going on in Javits Convention Center today. I have an extra ticket. Would you like to join me? I said, what exactly is going on in Javits Convention Center that you think that I would be interested in? He said, we're having a kosher food fest. What is that? All the producers of kosher food bring their latest innovations and products for the coming year to Javits Convention Center, set them up on tables. That's what it was like then. And people walk around the tables and look and taste the various new ideas in kosher food for the coming year. I said, look, I have nothing against food, right? Especially kosher food. But I just came 11 hours ago from Eretz Yisrael, and we were walking around tables looking at Sfarim. Now you want me to walk around tables and look at food? You've got to be a very big difference between if your focus is on Sfarim or your focus is on food. There's nothing wrong with kosher food. But if that becomes the focus, eat, drink, and be merry, then something's wrong. So that's Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is conducive to the Torah philosophy of put in work now for the future. And it affects even Goyim here, even irreligious Jews. Look at the Chalutzim who came here in the first Aliyot, right? Many of them were not religious or anti-religious, communists, socialists, anti-religious. But they didn't come here to eat, drink, and be merry. They came to clear the swamps and prepare for the future, put in effort then for a future that they themselves would not even benefit from. Their children, grandchildren would benefit. The environment in Eretz Yisrael is conducive to put in work now for the future. A Jewish, a religious person will use that to put in work now for the future of Olam Haba. But it's in the air. Even the Obi Avodah Zorah are affected by it. In Chutz La'aretz, the environment is eat, drink, and be merry. Again, you can fight against both environments, but it's a fight. There you have to fight to do what's right. Here you have to fight to do what's wrong. In any case, so that is the concept of fruit. The concept of fruit is if you learn about the fruit tree, Aleph, Tzaddik, the Elon, learn about the fruit, you'll know what a Tzaddik is. A Tzaddik is somebody who's willing to put in effort now and see the fruit in the future. But that's not the idea of justice. It's the idea of the Ribbono Shel Olam giving a person the ability. Who actually brings the fruit out on the tree? The Ribbono Shel Olam. He makes it rain. Without him, you can't have it. You need that help. But you have to put your effort. You plant the seeds. And the Ribbono Shel Olam will make it rain. You can't make it rain. And he'll help you bring that fruit out. So that's how we prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, the Rosh Hashanah of mercy, by learning and by dealing with the fruit of the Ilanos. Now let me tell you something even more than that. So in Eretz Yisrael, where this philosophy of fruit is environmentally there, it's part of the Ruach, It's in the air. So God gave us mitzvahs to do with fruit that we don't have in Chutz Lars. The mitzvahs basically of Trumas and Maisras. And there are four different mitzvahs. There's Truma, which is the first. You take the first and you dedicate it to God by giving it to the Kohen. That's Truma. Truma is called Reishis, the beginning. And then we have Maisar Rishon. We take a tenth of the crop and we dedicate it to God. We give it to the Levi. That's Maisar Rishon, first Maisar. And then there is Maisar Sheni. Maisar Sheni is we take a second tenth and we bring it to Yerushalayim and we eat it there. You don't give it to a Kohen or a Levi, you eat it. But you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. Can't eat it anywhere outside of Yerushalayim. And then the fourth mitzvah is Maisar Ani. You have to take a tenth on the third year of the Shemitah cycle and the sixth year and give it to the poor. You don't take it yourself to Yerushalayim like you do on the first and second years of the Shemitah and fourth and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle. And the third and sixth year, you, instead of bringing it to Yerushalayim and eating it, you give it to the poor. That's Maisar Ani. Four different mitzvahs. Why one of these mitzvahs tell me, they enhance this concept of the fruit philosophy, of putting in effort now for the eternal fruit of Olam Haba. How do they enhance it? The following way. We dedicate the first, Truma, to God. Why? Because the first is the foundation and root of everything that comes after it. It sets the pattern. If you dedicate something, the first, then the rest will follow that pattern. So we get the idea that in this world, we have to dedicate everything to God. Whatever we do, eating, drinking, sleeping, and entertainment, should be dedicated to service of the Rabbanu Shalom. So we get that idea very strongly by dedicating the first of our fruit, of our crops, to Hashem, Truma. You dedicate the first to God, get the idea that that's the purpose of this world, to dedicate yourself to the service of the Rabbanu Shalom. And then we dedicate the tenth to Hashem. Why? The tenth represents the goal. The first represents the foundation and the root. The tenth represents the goal. How so? God was one. That was how the world started. God and nothing else. And then God created many things. 2, 3, 4, 5, till 9 is separate things. 10 comes and unites all those separate things into one unit of 10. That's how it's written in Arabic numerals, 1, 10, and 0, 1s. It's now a unit of 10. That's why 10 represents unity. A minyan, a tzibur, is 10. A minyan is 10. Asiri kodesh, the 10th is always holy because it represents uniting all the many things in service of God. That's the goal. It starts with one, and then there's many things. The goal is to unite those many things under the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Asiri is the first number that is not with another number after, a different number. After that, you build on the 10. Achadisrei, Shteimesrei, Shloshesrei, and so on. The 10 remains a unit. That's a decimal system. So we dedicate the 10th, the goal, to Hashem. First, you dedicate the first, set the pattern, and then you dedicate the 10th to complete that pattern. And then, now you have the right philosophy. Okay, I know everything should be dedicated to God, but now I have to implement it. How do you implement it? How do you dedicate everything to God? How do you put it into practice? So you have to learn how to do it. That's Maisar Sheni. Maisar Sheni, it says in the Torah, L'man tilmad l'yiras Hashem Elokecha. You should learn how to fear God by bringing your Maisar to Yerushalayim. Says Tosfos, how do you learn how to fear God? By eating fruit in Yerushalayim, eating your crops in Yerushalayim. He says in Yerushalayim was the capital of religiosity in Klal Yisrael. That's where the Beis HaMikdash was. That's where the Kohanim were. That's where the yeshivas were, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah. So you came in contact with the Sanhedrin, the Gedolei Yisrael, with the yeshivas, with the Beis HaMikdash, with the Kohanim, and you learned. You couldn't eat all your meiser in one day. You had to stay there for a while. So you rubbed shoulders with all these people. You went and learned in the yeshiva for a while, right? There was nothing else to do in Yerushalayim. So you learned how to fear God. You learned how to implement the philosophy that you got from Truma and Meiser Rishon. Now learn how to implement it. And lastly, it's very nice that you are concerned about dedicating your life to God and learning about how to do it, but you can't only worry about yourself. You have to see to it that other people are able to do that too. That's Meiser Ani. Give to the Ani and see to it that he can also function. You can't only worry about yourself in this world. Those are the four mitzvahs that deal with fruit and bring out the purpose of fruit in this world to teach me the idea of putting in effort now for the future fruit of Olam Haba. Again, Meiser Truma, we dedicate the first to Hashem. Meiser Rishon, we dedicate the 10th. Meiser Sheni, we learn how to implement that. And Meiser Ani, we share it with others. Now, I'll tell you something I think very interesting. If you take letters of the Aleph Beis to represent these mitzvahs, what would they be? You want to take a letter of the Aleph Beis to represent dedicating the first to God, obviously to Aleph. You want to have a letter that represents dedicating the 10th to God, Yud. We want to have a letter that represents learning how to do that, Lamed. And you want to have a letter to represent giving to someone who can't support himself, that's an Ani. An Ani is a nofel, he falls, he can't be supported. Says that David HaMelech didn't put a nun in Ashrei because it represents falling. So what did he do? Where the nun should have been, he put Samech, Somech Hashem, to support. So the nun represents someone who can't support himself. That's an Ani. That's Meiser Ani. That's giving to help support somebody who can't support himself. What do those letters spell? Aleph, Yud, Lamed, Nun, Ilan. That's the tree. Four mitzvahs, Truma, the first, Yud, Meiser Rishon, the 10th, Lamech, learning how to do it, Nun, supporting the person who's falling, that's Ilan, that is the fruit tree that helps prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan. You want to have rachamim, so you can be, God doesn't want you just to negate yourself and burn yourself on the altar. He wants you to be dynamic. He's going to help you. So you know how to prepare yourself for that? First, get the right philosophy of fruit. Put in effort here for the future, and God will help you. Just like you plant the seed, and God will see to it that there's rain, and your efforts will be successful. That rain, water, represents Torah. So the way that you prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, where you're going to be dynamic, not negating yourself to God, but working together with him, so you put in the effort, God will see to it that your efforts will be successful, and together you'll be able to prepare that fruit for the world to come. That is Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat, we are involved with fruit, the fruit philosophy of this world, and in that way we prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan and our freedom on Pesach, which is the culmination of that Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, which is Chag HaPesach, the holiday of mercy and the holiday of freedom. Okay, I think I've given you something to think about. That is the two Bishvat and two Be'av, two Rosh Hashanahs, the Rosh Hashanah of Din and the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim, and two trees, the trees of Tu Be'av, where we cut the trees down and burn them on the altar, and the trees of Tu Bishvat that are the life-giving, fruit-bearing trees of Tu Bishvat that lead to the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim.